Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Coca-Cola FEMSA's fourth quarter and full year 2018 conference. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded, and all participants are in a listen-only mode. At the request of the company, we will open the conference up for questions and answers after the presentation. During this conference call, management may discuss certain forward-looking statements concerning Coca-Cola FEMSA's future performance and should be considered as good faith estimates made by the company. These forward-looking statements reflect management's expectations and are based upon currently available data. Actual results are subject to future events and uncertainties, which can materially impact the company's actual performance. And now, at this time, I would like to turn the call over to Mr. John Santamaria, Coca-Cola FEMSA's Chief Executive Officer. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us to discuss our fourth quarter 2018 results. Constantinos Paz, Hector Trevino, and Maria de la Castro are all with us today. We completed a historic year for our company as we celebrated the 25th anniversary of Coca-Cola FEMSA's incorporation and stock exchange listing. At the time of its IPO in September 1993, our company was valued at $1 billion. Today, our company is valued at almost $13 billion, 13 times its original market value, for an annual total return to shareholders of over 19.2%. In 1994, we took our first step abroad with the acquisition of Coca-Cola Buenos Aires in Argentina. In 2003, we seized a leadership position in the beverage industry with the transformational acquisition of Pan Amco, expanding our presence to 9 of Latin America's most important markets and multiplying our volume 6 times. From 2008 to 2016, we strengthened our company's leadership position in Brazil with the acquisition and integration of 4 significant franchises that expanded our presence to more than 50% of the Coca-Cola system countrywide. Correspondingly, we bolstered our footprint in Mexico through our merger and integration of 4 bottling franchises from 2011 through 2013. Moreover, we remained at the forefront of the total beverage portfolio evolution. First, our joint acquisition of Jugos del Valle in 2007 captured the potential of a powerful brand that is now one of the Coca-Cola system's billion-dollar brands. Second, we established a partnership with Leão in Brazil to develop a broad portfolio of still beverages. Third, we began a journey into the value-added dairy category through our joint ventures with Estrella Azul in Panama, Santa Clara in Mexico, and Verde Campo in Brazil. More recently, we entered a new plant-based beverage category with our joint acquisition of Avis in 2017. Finally, in 2018, we integrated 2 franchises in Guatemala and expanded our geographic footprint to Uruguay to continue capitalizing on strategic long-term value creation opportunities for Coca-Cola FEMSA. Over the past 25 years, we have reinvested more than $20 billion in our business, with $11.4 billion in accretive mergers and acquisitions, enjoying the privilege of integrating great bottling franchises, traditional families, and great collaborators into this Coca-Cola FEMSA, new Coca-Cola FEMSA business. Our entrepreneurial spirit and passion for customers and consumers have always powered our drive to innovate through the integration of transformative practices that have been followed by bottlers around the world, from revenue growth management to segmented point of sale execution and end-to-end supply chain integration. Now we are taking our continuous evolution even further, setting a new frontier with cutting-edge digital technology tailored to create a new competitive advantage based on our demand-driven Coca-Cola FEMSA commercial digital platform, advanced market analytics, and COF digital distribution platforms, which integrate revolutionary capabilities to set the new standards for the way we serve our markets and consumers. Focused on our clear strategy, we finished a year of continued transformation and growth. After a successful 5-year turnaround of the Philippines operation, we sold our 51% stake in Coca-Cola FEMSA Philippines as the best course of action for our company's shareholders. Looking forward, we will continually evaluate geographic and category opportunities, maintaining our disciplined approach to capital allocation to maximize our shareholders' returns. With that in mind, 2018 was a year of restructuring and transformation marked by, first, the deconsolidation of our Venezuelan operation at the end of 2017. Secondly, the sale of the stake of the Philippines at the end of 2018. Thirdly, the integration of three new franchises in Guatemala and Uruguay. And fourth, the adoption of hyperinflationary accounting in Argentina. Moreover, in the face of a complex and volatile macroeconomic environment in some of our markets, we put Coca-Cola FEMSA on an extremely solid financial foundation. We not only reduced our net leverage position, but also affirmed our credit ratings by Moody's and Standard & Poor's. We reported solid comparable top-line growth of close to 6% for 2018. Our revenue management initiatives, backed by analytics and deployed in an agile and assertive way, directly in each point of sale, allowed us to create comparable volumes, 1.3% and growth of 1.3%, while prices were ahead of or in line with inflation in most of our operations. Our comparable operating income increased 5.5% compared to last year, as lower sweetener costs, a favorable currency hedging position in South America, and operating expense efficiencies were offset by higher pet prices among our operations. Our comparable operating cash flow was flat year over year. Consequently, our net controlling interest income was 5.541 billion pesos for earnings per share of 2.64 pesos per share. Additionally, reported quarterly earnings per share of 1.38 pesos for our continuing operations as we consider the Philippines business a discontinued operation. Finally, I would like to thank Hector after more than 25 years as our Chief Financial Officer and a distinguished career of more than 37 years at FEMSA for his collaboration and his friendship. Hector decided to retire effective December 31st, 2018. Over the years, Hector led our company's profitable growth through his strategic vision, unwavering financial discipline, and unmatched work ethic. Hector is leaving a lasting legacy for Constantino to build on, and many, many friendships, deep friendships, at Coca-Cola FEMSA and the Coca-Cola Company. With that, let me turn the call over to Hector.
Thank you, John, and good morning, everyone. For me and for our company, it has been a very impressive 25-year journey. Throughout this journey, we sustained our company's strong capital structure and financial flexibility, maintained our disciplined approach to capital allocation, while capitalizing on our operational excellence to smoothly and successfully integrate new territories and various categories into our company. Consequently, we are now the largest non-alcoholic beverage company in Latin America, creating value for our shareholders by multiplying the original value of Coca-Cola FEMSA by 13 times. Coca-Cola FEMSA has proved a successful growth story, and I'm thankful for all the people with whom I interacted. They play an important part in my career. And with that, I will hand the call over to Constantino.
Thank you, Hector, and good morning, everyone. I'm very honored to have the opportunity to continue with the legacy that Hector has built for this organization. Hector is not only a phenomenal CFO, but also a great mentor and friend, and has been very helpful for me in my transition into Coca-Cola FEMSA. I would like to share my five key priorities as I take the role. Number one, ensure we maintain our solid financial foundation and a disciplined approach to capital allocation in order to continuously improve our return over invested capital. Number two, continue evolving the finance function with a business partner mindset, working collaboratively with our operations and other functions to ensure that they're fully equipped to drive our top and bottom line results and maximize shareholder value. Third, guarantee that we continue attracting and developing our talent base in the finance function. Number four, continue with our approach of transparency, fair disclosure, and continuous communication with our stakeholders. And finally, support John and the senior leadership team in our continuous journey of cultural transformation, reinforcing our DNA elements. Number one, our obsessive focus on customers and consumers. Number two, our operational excellence focus. Three, continue creating owner's mentality across everyone who works at Coca-Cola FEMSA. Number four, putting people first in every decision we make. And finally, agile decision-making and agile organization as something that is very critical in a volatile, uncertain, complex environment that we face. Turning to our operational and financial highlights, it is important to note that several factors affected the comparability over year-over-year results for the fourth quarter. Number one, as previously announced, due to the change in the reporting method, the results of Coca-Cola FEMSA de Venezuela are no longer included in our consolidated financial statements as of January 1st, 2018. Number two, volume and financial results of our recently acquired territories in Guatemala and Uruguay were consolidated as of May 1st and July 1st, 2018, respectively. Third, on August 16th, 2018, we announced to exercise a put option to sell our 51 stake in the Coca-Cola FEMSA Philippines to the Coca-Cola Company. That transaction closed on December 13, 2018. Therefore, according to IFRS 5, the Philippines operation is presented as a discontinued operation as of January 1, 2018, and our consolidated financial statements were re-presented as if the Philippines had been discontinued from the beginning of 2017. Consequently, our company's consolidated financial results are not comparable to the financial statements published in 2017. Number four, as of July 1, 2018, our Argentina operation was reported as a hyperinflationary subsidiary. This means that we had to re-express the results of any given month in real terms to the end of the reporting period. Thus, the results of our Argentina operation in October and November were re-expressed in real terms as of December 31st. Also, we had to use the end-of-period exchange rate to translate the reported results of our Argentina operation to Mexican pesos. To better describe our business performance, for certain information, we present comparable figures, excluding the effects of, one, mergers and acquisitions, two, translation effects resulting from exchange rate movements, three, the results of Argentina, because this operation has become hyperinflationary, and number four, the results of Venezuela in 2017, as it had been deconsolidated. Guided by our clear strategy, we navigated a very complex environment to deliver positive comparable results this year. Our comparable sales volume increased 0.9% to 972 million unit cases, with transactions growing 1.4%. Comparable total revenues grew 7.8% to 50.2 billion pesos. Comparable operating income grew 4.3% to 7.3 billion pesos, and comparable operating cash flow grew 4.1% to 10.2 billion pesos. Now I would like to briefly discuss each of our operations highlights for the quarter. In Mexico, we maintained a healthy market share, delivering revenue growth of 4.4% in the face of macroeconomic uncertainty and currency volatility. Our Mexico operations volume declined 0.9%. as we experienced worse than expected weather conditions in November and December. Moreover, we increased prices in November, affecting our volume for the month, but proactively preparing us for the beginning of this year, 2019. Also, our portfolio mix impacted our average price for the quarter as multi-serve and returnable presentations increased their share of our portfolio mix. With regard to profitability, our pricing aligned with inflation, currency hedging, declining sweetener prices and expense control strategies, coupled with our digital initiatives, partially mitigated higher PET and concentrate prices. Beginning July 1st, 2018, the price of concentrate increased another 1% of revenues for the next 12 months. Moving south into Central America, we leverage our portfolio of affordable presentations to continue a turnaround in Costa Rica and Guatemala, while improving Panama's top-line growth. The consolidation of new territories, our successful pre-sale model rollout in Guatemala, and focus on execution enabled us to achieve double-digit volume growth and improve our market share in such a competitive market. Increased prices across our four operations drove mid-single-digit organic revenue growth despite an organic volume decline of 3.5%. Our Costa Rica and Panama operations reported low single-digit volume contraction, while Nicaragua continued its low double-digit contraction. Despite softening consumer dynamics resulting from a disruptive socio-political environment, our Nicaraguan operators have been able to contain the volume contraction. However, including our recent acquisitions in Guatemala, we reported 27% volume growth for the region. Guatemala continues to perform positively with low single-digit organic volume growth. And in our new franchises, we're capturing synergies through portfolio alignment, mainly in the still beverage category, as we started implemented our portfolio and we launched our 2-liter multi-serve returnable PET presentation, which has been working very well in the market. For the quarter, our lower sweetener prices and expense control strategies were offset by higher PET prices and depreciation of the average exchange rate of the Costa Rican Colon and Nicaraguan Cordoba, as applied to our U.S.-denominated raw material costs. Moving on to South America, emerging from a tough macroeconomic environment in Brazil, we delivered consistent volume growth for the year. Leveraging upon our affordability strategy, our portfolio is very well positioned to satisfy Brazil's recovering consumer environment. We continue the positive volume trend in Brazil, marked by a fifth consecutive quarter of volume growth, as volume grew 4.5% for the quarter, with transactions outperforming volumes. Our colas, water, and still beverage categories, volume outperformed for the quarter, thanks to our focus on execution and our digital capabilities, which enabled us to launch more than 100 innovations in the back end of 2018, which is a great achievement for the team and an important reconfiguration of a portfolio in the market. Although we increased prices during the quarter to proactively prepare us for the first half of 2019, our price mix benefited from the performance of our single-serve presentations. However, in Mexican pesos, our revenues were affected by a negative currency translation. Led by our affordability strategy, we improved our volumes in the face of Colombia's challenging, gradually recovering consumer environment. For the quarter, we generated 3.1% volume growth, with high single-digit growth from our colas portfolio, thanks to the performance of our returnable 2-liter PET presentation, which has achieved double-digit growth. We also improved the water and still beverage category performance with our personal water portfolio, having double-digit growth, and our launch of Del Valle Frutal, improving our share in these categories. However, after Colombia's very positive performance for 2018, we're operating under a very different environment this year. Starting last January, Colombia's fiscal reform changed the way VAT is applied to sugar beverages and beer, from a monophase to a multi-phase scheme. This impacts all of the product chain, from our distributors to our final consumers. While it is too early to tell to confirm the impact of on our volumes, we expect negative performance for the coming year. Accordingly, we're reassessing our current business model to ensure we have a sustainable, profitable operation. Confronting Argentina's tough macroeconomic environment and marked by hyperinflation and deep currency devaluation, our volume declined 27% for the quarter due to the tough year-over-year comparability. At the year earlier period marked, the earlier year period marked the last quarter of a positive currency environment. Nonetheless, we were able to increase our prices ahead of inflation, increasing prices by 59% on a local currency basis. However, due to a negative translation effect, our revenues that were reported declined 45%. Moving forward, we're much better prepared than ever for this market's challenges, thanks to our growing mix of affordable packages and no sugar beverages, digital initiatives, currency hedging, and cost and expense controls. With respect to Uruguay, which we integrated in 2018, our integration process is proceeding according to plan. We're countering the region's difficult macroeconomic environment through synergies and long-term structural efficiencies. We're also improving our market share, particularly in the flavored sparkling beverage segments. For the fourth quarter, we reported sales volume of 13.3 million unit cases. Like Argentina, this operations portfolio enjoys a higher mix of low and no sugar beverages, reaching 67% this quarter. In our South America division, favorable sweetener and aluminum prices, coupled with the positive currency hedging and expense control strategy, enabled our operations to partially offset higher PET prices and the depreciation of local currencies, as applied to our unhedged U.S. dollar-denominated raw material cost, which impacted the division's profitability for the fourth quarter. In Venezuela, we continuously adjust our business model to serve our consumers and clients in a very tough and difficult environment to operate in. Finally, as a result of the continuous analysis of our investments in joint ventures, as of December 31st, 2018, we realized an impairment of our investment in Estrella Azul, our dairy joint venture with the Coca-Cola Company in Panama. The outcome of this analysis led us to register an impairment of 432 million pesos. Both Coca-Cola FEMSA and the Coca-Cola Company are fully committed to continue focusing on this operation in a very profitable way. Now, with regards to our financial results for 2018, we reduced our total debt by $1.6 billion compared with year-end 2017. This reduction resulted mainly from the payment of $445 million U.S. dollars for Yankee bond due in 2018, which was partially offset by the new bank loans in Mexico and Uruguay. Additionally, our weighted average cost of debt for the quarter was 8.2%, including the effect of debt swapped to Brazilian reais and Mexican pesos. This year-over-year increase was due mainly to a fixed exposure to Brazilian real-denominated debt and the effect of the increase of the TIIE rate on our bilateral loans in Mexican pesos. As we received the proceeds for the sale of our 51% stake in the Philippines in December, our net leverage ratio ended at 1.61 times. Our comprehensive financial results recorded an expense of 2.1 billion Mexican pesos, resulting from two main factors. First, a foreign exchange loss in our U.S. dollar denominated cash exposure as the Mexican peso appreciated in December, and two, in the loss or gain on monetary position line. In 2017, we reported a gain for Venezuela, whereas in 2018, we reported a minor gain for our Argentina operation. As we are reporting our Argentine operation as a hyperinflationary subsidiary, we were required to re-express the results for October and November in real terms as of December 2018, as we use the end-of-period exchange rate to translate the results to Mexican pesos. Accordingly, we recorded monetary position gain in inflationary subsidiaries of 59 million pesos, as compared to a gain of 460 million pesos in 2017, driven by our Venezuela operation. During the quarter, we reported income tax as a percentage of income before taxes of 30%. This result was driven mainly by the increase in the relative weight of Brazil's profits in our consolidated results, which have a higher tax rate. Finally, as we announced on January 31st, 2019, and subject to the approval of Mexican National Banking and Securities Commission, we proposed to our shareholders a stock split in the issuance of Series B shares to be listed together with Series L shares in the form of units to allow our company to increase its capacity to issue new equity, which may be used as consideration in future share-based acquisitions, as well as for general corporate purposes. We will continue to maintain our disciplined approach to capital allocation, and we're confident that the listing of Series L shares and Series B shares in the form of units will help unlock value for shareholders and position Coca-Cola FEMSA for new growth opportunities in the future. Obtaining the Commission's authorization, we will announce the record date and exchange date for all holders of Series L shares and the conversion date for all holders of ADSs. We expect that the announcement will happen during the first quarter of 2019. And with that, I'll hand the call back over to John for his final remarks. Thank you very much.
Thank you. In an ongoing effort to promote our leadership talent, starting this year, we are pleased to report the following organizational changes. Fabricio Ponce, former Chief Operating Officer in the Philippines, is our new Chief Operating Officer for our Mexico operation. Prior to his assignment in the Philippines, Fabricio served as the head of our Colombian operations, Managing Director of our Central American operations, Managing Director of Argentina and Brazil and Colombian operations, and Strategic Planning Director of our Latin American operations during his 30-year career with Coca-Cola FEMSA, and now is coming back from Philippines to start applying what we learned over there to the Mexican market. Xiomar Sarasua, former Chief Operating Officer in Mexico, is our new Strategic Planning and New Business Officer. Prior to joining our company, Xiomar served for more than 30 years in the Coca-Cola company. His different positions included Chief Executive Officer of the Brazil Business Unit from 2008 to 2016, and Chief Executive Officer of the Latin America Business Unit from 2006 to 2008. He also served in different areas in Mexico and Central America. At Coca-Cola FEMSA, we are committed to continuing our legacy of entrepreneurship, innovation, and operational excellence, strengthening our capabilities to become a bigger, better, and bolder bottling company to achieve our joint vision of beverages for life and generating economic, social, and environmental value for all our stakeholders. In closing, we continue to focus on becoming a total beverage leader in our current and future geographies, continuously pursuing sustainable, profitable growth, and enhancing our capabilities to remain a superior market developer in the Coca-Cola system. Operator, I would like to open the call to questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, simply press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad. Also, if you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, please press star 1 at this time. We'll pause for just a moment. And we'll first hear from Fernando Olvera of Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Thanks for the call. And I have a couple of questions which are related to Brazil. I mean, regarding volume, you registered a really very solid volume growth this quarter. No, I think the strongest quarterly growth of the year. So can you elaborate more on what was behind such growth and how does your market share behave during the quarter? Also, how should we think about consumption this year and what is your outlook on volume growth this year? That's all. Thanks.
Thank you, Fernando. This is Constantino. Well, yeah, certainly. Brazil had another positive quarter. We continue to be very encouraged by the positive performance we have in Brazil. It's the fifth consecutive quarter of volume growth. As you mentioned, volume growth increased 4.5%. Overall, weather helped significantly, especially during December. In addition to that, as I mentioned, we have a very successful implementation of affordability initiatives. Additions to the portfolio, as I said, during the year we did around 100 launches in Brazil across all categories. And honestly, there's a huge focus on execution at the point of sale by the team. And also we have been driven by some digital initiatives across our omnichannel strategy. Our market share remains steady. We're gaining some traction in market share, both in CSDs especially in colas, but also in juices and nectars and water, as well as isotonic and energy drinks. Overall, we're seeing a very, very positive beginning of the year. The outlook in terms of macroeconomics and consumer optimism in Brazil is starting to pick up again. So we hope we continue with this trend and momentum in Brazil. Thank you.
Great. Thanks.
Next, we'll hear from Benjamin Thor of Barclays.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you very much for taking my question. So two questions, actually, one on the outlook in Mexico. What do you expect? How do you feel about the consumer environment, demand scenario, and obviously the fact that you had obviously a little bit of cost pressure from the concentrate? What's your pricing strategy looking into 2019 on the Mexican market? That would be my first question.
Thank you. It's Constantino again. Well, overall, we're seeing positive trend as we start 2019. We have been very effective in price management above inflation. I mean, we're significantly leveraging our analytics platform for the last couple of years, which as time goes by becomes more robust and more accurate and allows us to be much more effective, not only on pricing and developing a pricing architecture, but at the same time on being more efficient in the allocation of discounts and promotions across our different channels. So that has been and will continue to be a driver for our performance in Mexico next year, coupled with, you know, significant improvements in our execution at the point of sale. On top of that, we're seeing a resilient consumer. It's gradually recovering confidence. January, we saw positive volumes at the start of the year, which is good, taking us in the right path, although we had some weakness at the end of 2018, but January was pretty positive. And at the same time, weather has been favorable for us throughout the beginning of the year. Our portfolio affordability is increasing. We are working very hard behind a returnable portfolio, and our NCB portfolio also continues to gain traction. On the profitability side, as you mentioned, we're seeing more stable raw materials environment, sugar and PET prices significantly, which were hard last year, coupled with a significant amount of productivity initiatives to protect our bottom line in Mexico. So I think that probably provides you a little bit of an outlook of what we're seeing for the Mexican market right now.
This is John. I just think complimenting on that, I think what we're seeing also is the fact that, you know, we will have increased government spending. So the short-term consumption pattern for Mexico on consumer goods, and specifically in our territories, is going to be very favorable.
Yes.
Okay, and with that, do you expect also transactions to somehow pick up? Because that has been somewhat weakish, especially in the fourth quarter. But if we take a look, transactions throughout the year were slightly negative, 2018 versus 17. So I assume you're expecting a little bit of a recovery there as well. Because what we've basically seen was no volume growth throughout the year with some minor transaction, and everything came from price. So the question is that transaction plus volume, what can drive top line growth in 19?
Right. Good question. I think one of the things that we're going to start focusing on much more heavily this year in Mexico is single serve. Single serve and in an affordable way. Single serve returnables. I think we have a good lesson from the Philippines that we can bring into Mexico, where we can go into having very, you know, affordable entry price points, okay, in a very significant manner in many markets in Mexico that requires it. So, you know, between what we're doing in revenue growth management on multi-serve, along with the focus on retaking single serve, I do think we'll have, you know, enhanced transaction growth and revenue growth behind our Mexican operation.
Okay, perfect. And then just one last question. This is really just more of an accounting one. On the filing you submitted to the Mexican Stock Exchange, you basically reported 51.8 billion pesos in revenues. The press release throughout the whole report states 50.2. What's the difference of that 3%? Because it literally runs through the whole income statement. Just a quick clarification. So which number should we actually use?
Benjamin, we had a problem with the platform.
Hello?
And just a moment.
Benjamin.
And you may proceed.
Yeah. Benjamin, I don't know what you heard until we got cut off. But again, just to reiterate, we had
platform and that it got cut off. That was the last word.
Yes, we had as we were loading the data to the Mexican Stock Exchange platform last night, we had a lot of difficulties putting that data onto the platform. And the correct data to focus on is the press release data. We will be correcting the data on the Mexican Stock Exchange during the course of the morning.
Okay, perfect. That was all. Thank you very much, and I'll pass it on. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we'll hear from Lucas Ferreira of J.P. Morgan.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to say, for Hector to have a good luck in his this new position, actually new phase of his life. And my first question is actually on Colombia. If you guys can comment on the outlook for volumes, how this first month has been, and especially considering this change in the VAT charge, if volumes have been coming above expectations. And what the sort of impact that we should expect for volumes in the first quarter and for 2019. And my second question is regarding costs. So if you guys can comment on the cost trends for the year, if you already foresee some improvements in PET in the first half of the year, and also the other main cost lines, if we should expect already a better year in terms of alpha costs per hectoliter sold, and if we should see some improvements in margins on the back of that. Thank you very much.
Next, we'll hear from Alan Alanis of UBS.
I'll be very happy to ask my question, but I don't know if they're on the line. John, are you on the line?
Just a moment.
Thank you so much. I think they have to reply to Lucas' question first. Questions first, and then I'll go afterwards.
Please hold the line while I reconnect our presenters.
Yes, one moment, please.
Hello?
You may proceed.
Okay, thank you. Hello, Lucas. Hello, Lucas. The next question.
We're on Alan.
Yes, I'll ask my question, but I guess we can circle back afterwards to Lucas.
Yeah, we can go back to Lucas.
Sure. I just want to be a gentleman here. Well, first of all, Hector, congratulations. I mean, as a former boss, mentor, I mean, you've both been a great example, and I sincerely wish you the best at this new stage. You will be missed. John Costantino, my first question has to do with the criteria for transactions in M&A post the approval of this split. How does it change the criteria? You could just update us how you're thinking now that you will be able to issue more shares for M&A. And that would be the first question, and then I have a follow-up more regarding let me put it on the table right away. It has to do with the role of beer in your portfolio in Brazil. If our numbers are correct, we saw very strong revenue growth for the beer category in your results in the fourth quarter. I think that given that Heineken said that they reported low mid single digits in the fourth quarter, it indicates that you had a lot of pricing in beer in Brazil, and I just want to see if you can confirm that. And what is the overall role of beer in Brazil, and if you can give us any update in terms of the arbitration that you're going on with Heineken, that would be highly appreciated. Those will be my two questions.
Well, let me tackle the last question first. First of all, as you know, we're in the middle of I know everybody wants to know about beer in Brazil. But as you're aware, we're in the middle of an arbitration process, so there's very little we can say about it until the arbitration process finalizes, which we expect it to happen between the first half of the year or maybe the beginning of the third quarter. So just for those purposes, I'm not going to comment around our perspective on beer going forward in Brazil. And I hope you understand that particular element.
I do.
In terms of performance, you're right. The beer category is going through very positive momentum for us in our region or in the area of influence where Kof operates in Brazil. I guess Heineken has reported some of those numbers. And I would rather have the guidance from the Heineken release and conversation that occurred a couple of weeks ago. But overall, we're seeing strong growth. The brands Heineken and brand Amstel have very good momentum. And this particular element is something that we're seeing consistently happening in the market for a while. And we foresee it happening. So the premium segment of the beer category should continue strengthening from our perspective in the Brazilian market. So that's all I want to comment around beer. And I think the Heineken release has significant information that can provide you guidance in that regard. On the M&A piece and the stock split, as you know, the changes that we announced just aim to give us flexibility on our capital structure by increasing our capacity to issue equity that may be used as a consideration in future share-based mergers or acquisitions. However, there is no project or initiative or target in mind that drove that decision. It has been something in the making for a while. Actually, I have Hector on my side, who has been the architect of this particular initiative, and I'll ask him if he wants to comment beyond that. But there is no change in our focus on M&A. As you know, we have been historically known by being very disciplined on our capital allocation, and we'll do the investments that are right for a company and our shareholders at the proper value and at the proper time. And the mechanism that we put behind those transactions is defined at the moment we see that the target and the initiative unfolding. I don't know if Hector wants to comment something
on the stock split to give you a little bit more guidance.
Thank you.
As Constantino mentioned, this has been in the making for many years. Actually, since the Bompar acquisition, we started to define this need. And if you remember, we have this convertible bond that was issued with respect to that acquisition, and that required this structure to be in place. It took a lot of time because we were looking for, and in conversation with the authorities, so that we can have a single unit trading as opposed to having Series B and Series L with a split trading that, in our opinion, will create some, you know, liquidity and issue and pricing problems for that. So we finally got the authorization at the end of last year. We were caught with the Christmas break and the change in the government, and finally we got final approval in January. But as Constantino says, it's something that was being developed and planned for quite a, basically for two and a half years. The Series B shares will now have some voting rights, which I think are very good for our shareholders, and that's basically the story.
Colin, John, I think as you guys see the history of acquisitions of Coca-Cola FEMSA, sometimes you use a large component of debt, and sometimes you use a large component of equity, but always trying to maintain our ratios within reason. What we have here is incremental flexibility, okay, to make sure that, you know, as we see opportunities or when they come up, and sometimes they're not necessarily projectable, you know, we have the financial strength and flexibility to do something that is reasonable and conservative for our shareholders, assuming that whatever transaction we have going forward is accretive. And I think this allows us a broader spectrum to go out there and feel comfortable that we're in a great, great financial position and also in a great capital position to continue down the path of doing further transactions.
Got it. That's very useful. Thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you, Alan.
And Lucas, your line is reopened. You may pose your question again at this time.
Hi, thank you. I'm not sure if you listened to the questions, but the first one was related to the elasticity in Colombia. If this is coming better than expected, what sort of impact you guys are expecting the volumes for the first quarter or the full year, if you can comment at least versus your expectations, initial expectations. And the second question was regarding the costs. I wanted to know at what part of the curve we are in terms of pressures, especially from PET, which I think should remain the one of the lines pressuring your costs. So can we expect already better cost base in the quarters to come? And what about the full year 2019? Thank you.
Lucas, how are you? Regarding Colombia, obviously the elimination of the tax benefit that we had in our plant is a very, very large impact for us. And it changed our short-term strategy of wanting going out there and restructuring our Colombian operation in a lot of different fronts. The first front was pricing, which we took up immediately in January. We took up over 6% pricing. Secondly, we had beginning to resize our operation. We've taken out 200 people in Colombia, basically staff people, to resize that operation. Thirdly, we're looking at redeveloping our route to markets plus our supply chain distribution network, because all of our benefits were stuck in the Tocancipop plant, and we're looking to reallocate those to the different plants that we have. So I think the first 4 to 5, 6 months in Colombia are going to be very focused on restructuring, to make sure that we're, facing the environment in the correct manner and sizing our company to that manner. What we think about elasticity is we've taken up the prices, and we're better than what we thought. So we have, you know, we're at the 6% rate, we're not seeing the same type of elasticity as we had before when the VAT was taken across the whole country a couple of years ago. So we're much better off than what we thought. And we're encouraged by what we're seeing in terms of savings. And obviously it's a very challenging year for Colombia, but I think we're on the right track with the right portfolio and with the right management as well.
Now, Lucas, and to your other question regarding raw materials, PET and sugar, we're seeing a better curve going forward in 2019 compared to 2018. So overall, our outlook in that particular element in line in our P&L should be more favorable this year than in the previous year.
Thank you very much.
And next we'll hear from Antonio Gonzalez of Credit Suisse.
Hi. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for taking my question. First, similarly, thank you for everything, Hector, and congrats on a truly remarkable career. And Constantino, best of luck on this new role. I have two questions, guys. The first one on dividends. You mentioned on today's press release that the board has proposed a dividend of 3 pesos and 54 cents per share, which is 5.7% growth versus last year. Obviously, there has been a debate recently after you exited from the Philippines on whether you could substantially increase the payout. On the other hand, obviously, visibility on the macro side in Mexico, I guess, has diminished significantly. So I just wanted to pick your brains as to what is the latest thinking with respect to the payout policy. Do you think we will remain at similar levels for the next couple of years, or do you actually see room for a substantial increase, and if so, in which time frame? And then secondly, I just wanted to ask very quickly, what triggers, is there any specific events that trigger the write-off in Panama? And is there any long-term learning here that we could extrapolate to your dairy ventures elsewhere, or is this more of a specific situation? Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Tonya. Let me address the dividend issue first. We are taking back our dividend policy to about, for the 2019 year in payout, to about 20-21% as was historically. We would have increased dividends further, but we want to make sure that we have the cash on hand to pay off a $500 million Yankee bond that comes due in February, of 2020. Okay, so we didn't see any economic benefit of going out there and borrowing to go out there and do such a short-term transaction to bring down the Yankee. So we wanted to keep that cash on hand. So going forward, once we're over that hump, we do have a possibility of increasing the dividend policy going forward for Coca-Cola FEMSA, and that would be our objective. However, we also would be very concerned with how market conditions continue to evolve. And what we want to make sure of is that we have enough financial flexibility and strength on our balance sheet to be able to ensure that whatever future dividends that we're going to go out there and increase are sustainable. Yeah. Secondly, in terms of the write-off of the Panama operation is the first real foray into value-added dairy that we had. And I think, what we've had is a lot of delays on the plant, bringing up the plant into a spec. This was neither a remake nor a greenfield. We have what we call a brownfield. We're just making the plant within a new plant within the existing plant. So that, if you ever remodeled your home, is a very difficult situation. So we've encountered delays, and we're also learning a heck of a lot more about how to manage dairies, because this is really the first time that we've gone into cold and value-added dairies with yogurts, ice creams. So it's been a very large learning process that we don't have anywhere else, in Mexico, we're basically all UHT, or even in Brazil, where it is chilled, but it is on a separate basis. So I think it's a very specific thing to Panama, that you really cannot go out there and project anyplace else. Now, that being said, we just came back from Panama a couple of days ago, and I'm very encouraged to see exactly how the project is coming along, the momentum it's gaining, and how our production platform is coming on stream nicely.
Gracias, sir.
You're welcome.
And before we take our next caller, I would like to remind you to please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up question, allowing others a chance to ask a question. Next, we will hear from Carlos Lavoy of HSBC.
Hector, congratulations and thank you for 25 years of forthright honesty and straight shooting, which has been, I think, very helpful for everybody. John, the catalog of achievements that you listed at the start of the call, we all get it. It's what makes you maybe the most valuable bottler Coke's ever had anywhere in the world in those 25 years for driving Next Frontier execution. But it all makes for a really great eulogy if you can't exceed your cost of capital on a sustained basis. When you look at the pressures you're facing in Brazil and you look at the pressures that you're facing with non-carb profitability, with marketing maybe of effectiveness at driving growth for your core brand, can you exceed your cost of capital without these things getting fixed? And the follow-up to that then is, you said that you're going to evaluate geographic and category opportunities, but you're also increasing the dividend. So are you willing to consider geographic opportunities for asset sales, not just for purchases, if you're staring at situations where you can't get from your partner what you need for exceeding your cost of capital?
Hello?
Yep.
Carlos, a couple things. Yes, over the last couple of years, we've had a series of years where we're not making our costs. We're slightly under the cost of capital for Coca-Cola FEMSA, and I think that's a true reflection of the market in terms of how we value Coca-Cola FEMSA. It's just not been increasing shareholder value. Now, there's a couple of reasons for that, and I think there's devaluations. There's incremental costs for raw materials. And, yes, importantly, there's been also incidence increases that have also been affecting us, you know, to the tune of the last 3-4 years of about $154 million that continue to give us headwinds. There's been consumer headwinds and there's been tax headwinds as well. So, you know, I think overall, you know, being close to cost of capital has not been bad, but it is not what we need, okay? The issue is how do we go out there and continue to grow cost, achieve our cost of capital? A couple things. First, I think in the general picture, you know, we need to go out there and amplify our portfolio. Well, first we need just to get our CSD portfolio back on track, and I think it was very encouraging to see during 2018 that Coca-Cola, brand Coca-Cola, grew almost 2%, okay, in terms of volume. And I think we put also a lot more revenue into the Coca-Cola system, you know, by growing, you know, both revenues and volume and transactions in Coca-Cola, brand Coca-Cola. I think secondly, you know, we need to go out there and fix our non-carb business, you know, or make it not fix it. I would say it's make it more profitable, okay? Right now, where we are, it is growing, but it's not nearly as profitable as our Coke business. But it is, as I would argue, it's marginal to the whole process. So, you know, or to the whole structure. So the more we go out there and grow, the more margin we do enhance. Now, when we bring down the non-carb business, it is what non-carb business do you want to talk about? Because within the non-carb business, there's a series of large businesses, or businesses that are very profitable. Energy, teas,
isotonics.
And ones we have to start I think, getting better returns on is just basic juices and nectars. And there's two ways of doing that. One is going out there getting better formulations, okay? And secondly, there's also a case of going up and doing a better portfolio by premiumizing it. And I think Brazil, as the last time you were down there, you saw how we premiumized the juice portfolio, making sure that we're going out there with higher premium category glass products, and they're doing very well, and there's a lot of margin involved in that. So I think, you know, from that end, we're starting to advance on the portfolio and getting it much more accretive for our Coca-Cola FEMSA shareholders. Secondly, I think it's in water. Okay, in water, we have to go out there and figure out exactly what we just did in juices in terms of developing a portfolio of premium brands, okay, to be able to really develop the brands and make sure that we have enhanced profitability over what we have today. Today, in most countries, we play with a core brand, which is Ciel in some places, Cristal in Brazil, that tries to play the gamma across premium, value, and core mainstream. And what we need to do is go out there and develop those brands differently. We've just launched Smart Water in Brazil. We've launched Smart Water in Argentina on an incipient basis. But those are the type of initiatives we need to continue to develop fully and aggressively to make sure that that portfolio becomes as profitable as carbonated soft drinks. And in carbonated soft drinks, and I just said this on another question, we need to refocus on engaging on transactions on single serves. And I think there, you know, we can do that by going back into glass and returnables, okay, in a way that I think our competitors can't, okay, both in Brazil, in Mexico, and elsewhere. So, you know, I think there is a good story to say that we're well poised to be able to go out and increase our profitability and our margins to cover our cost of capital and grow at the same time. In terms of Brazil, you're saying whether, you know, Brazil beer is something that we need to do and we don't need to do. Obviously, we can't comment on the existing arbitration, but the world is moving towards more and more integrated platforms. Brazil is an example. I think there's other countries that are also examples, and I think it's more compelling in Brazil than any place else, and for us, it would be very important for us to be able to have a beer solution in Brazil. I don't know if that covers all your questions, Carlos.
Yeah, the final question is that you had mentioned that you're going to continue to evaluate geographic and category opportunities, but everyone assumes that means that you're going to consider more asset purchases, but what you've done mostly recently is sales. The Philippines. Do you look at your existing portfolio of territories to sort out, well, maybe there's something in here that we shouldn't have?
Sure. Let me be clear about this. I mean, the thing with the Philippines was a very specific transaction and structure for the Philippines and Asia. And the way it was set up, the deal was set up, and that's what we negotiated at the time, is that we would go out there and we had a put and a call. And we had to go out and exercise the call to be able to further acquire territories in Asia. And given what's happened in the Philippines with the tax on sugar, we couldn't find a way to make hold of the prices that we had in the original transaction. And so, therefore, we, instead of going out there and modifying the whole transaction, what we landed up doing was just putting it back to the company. That philosophy is not in Coke FEMSA's, you know, DNA, okay? We're not asset sellers, okay? I don't have it envisioned to go out there and sell assets at this point anyplace else. And later on, from doing the Philippines, we just went out there and acquired two franchises in Guatemala and one in Uruguay that I would say gives you the pace of where we want to go in the future. We will continue to look at opportunities, both on a category basis and a territory basis, Carlos, okay? Again, just making sure that we're not going out there and destroying shareholder value.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next, we'll hear from Alex Robarts of Citi.
Yes, hi everybody. Thank you. I did want to start out by saying to Hector, thank you very much for the financial stewardship through the years. I hope the best in your well-deserved retirement. Two questions from my side. One on the operating deleverage in South America, and then the second on non-carbs. I guess we kind of came into the quarter thinking about, you know, lower sugar in South America, but then, you know, higher PET. But what seemed to kind of really explain or at least impact a lot of the deleverage, right? You show us comparatively 12% top line in South America growth in the quarter with 2% EBITDA growth. And that difference seems to kind of go to the what you call the raw material hedge, the unfavorable hedge there. Could you give us some more color as to what specifically was behind that raw material unfavorable hedge? Was it a particular input? Was it several? And might we expect some relief in this seasonally strong summer here in the first quarter, or might that continue to be unfavorable? So that's the first question. The second one relates to non-carbs. An interesting trend. You talked about it with us in the fall in New York when you came up. And now with the full year numbers, you know, we can kind of see how those non-carb volumes evolved. And, you know, when you look at Mexico and Brazil, it's kind of a tale of two cities, you know, flat non-carb volume growth in Mexico last year. And I guess kind of the impact there is bulk water coming down. The question is that going to continue to be a focus for you? Is that something that you want to de-emphasize, and should we continue that to see that decline? You know, the other side is Brazil, where you're, you know, mid-teen non-carb growth. A lot of it is stills, also waters. But it strikes me that it's, you know, it's 20% of the volume of non-carbs in Mexico. And so does M&A become something that you would look at this year in non-carbs in Brazil to kind of perhaps, you know, more right-size that kind of growing piece of your volume? And the final piece on the non-carbs, you know, last week Coca-Cola Company talks about in the conference that, you know, new products accounted for about 17% of volume growth last year. How do you think about just generally new products and the impact it can have on your growth this year? Would it be like Coke's number of mid-teens? Thanks very much. A lot of kind of sub-questions, but I appreciate the time.
Alex, let me see. Let me just try to take the last ones first, and then I'll let Hector or Constantino talk about the hedging questions that you asked. I think let me talk a little bit about bulk water, because, you know, bulk water is a good place to start on this conversation. We do have a very large bulk water business in Mexico, okay, and that is it's profitable, but it's not necessarily as profitable as we'd like it to be, and we've been working on maintaining or growing our profitability on primarily the 1920 liter jug business. And there what you will be seeing and what we're going to be emphasizing is obtaining better margins on that business in light of, you know, sacrificing volume. What we'd like to do is continue to price up, okay, and continue to gain better margins, and obviously also become much more efficient in our operation that we have. And there, and I would say the focus of this would probably be more southwest of Mexico than we have any place else. So the 20-liter jug business in Mexico is a big deal, and the profitability on bulk water, the 5-liter business, is also something that we're going to be looking at to make sure that we get the proper returns on that business. So that's something we'll focus on in both Mexico. Colombia is also an issue with that in terms of, you know, the 5 and 6 liter bottle, 6 liter bag business, and how do we start making our profitability a little bit better on those packs. On the non-car business in Brazil, as you said, you know, and I think one of the things to understand is we restructured that whole business in a big way. Of the 100 SKUs that we launched, the majority of those are non-carbs, and we're basically going towards two things. First is competing. First is putting ourselves in a competitive situation in our plants with coal fill products, which were coming out of Lao, and now we're sourcing them out of Jundiaí, okay? And that transition from, you know, the Lao plant to the Jundiaí plant is giving us an advantage to compete in low coal fill juices that is really the bottom part of the market. And that will allow us, at the same token, to be able to increase prices, okay, on the core leader Tetra juices and nectars, okay, which we were sacrificing before just to be able to maintain margin. And also, the increase in all the glass and hot fill capability is, in terms of premium products that we're doing, is also leading to better profitability. And we should start seeing that continue to grow, but profitably so, in Brazil over the first 6 to 7 months of the year. So I think where we are, and in Mexico, what we're looking at is better formulations, better cost structures, and we have enormous opportunity to make these better, both in Mexico and Brazil. So I think that the focus is the right one, and we're encouraged to see that we will be able to go out there and increase our profitability on non-carbs, okay, and bulk water businesses. Constantine, you want to take a look at the hedge? Or
sure. If I understand your question, what you, you're asking was the biggest impact in South America regarding our cost across the quarter. What I'll tell you is that PET was a main driver in across all markets, particularly in Brazil and Argentina. We had significant price increases in dollar terms in Brazil, almost 30% increases in PET costs in Brazil. Part of that was unhedged, but if you couple that with devaluation in Brazil, that was a significant impact for us in that particular operation that, considering the size of Brazil in our South American region, that has an important impact for us. We also had some labor cost increases in a couple of markets, Argentina and Brazil, and that explains most of the impact and cost that we had in the fourth quarter for Brazil. I don't know if that tackles your question.
Just, sorry, Constantino, specifically, the raw material hedge, though, right, I mean, which you talk about in the press release, was there, it was a hedged, it was a dollar hedged price for certain raw materials, correct? And that is something that
yes.
will roll, okay, and the question is, will that roll off? Is that going to continue into the first quarter? The question was, sorry, on the actual hedge, yeah.
Yes, actually, we have a very, it's a very disciplined approach towards hedging both on currency and on raw materials. I don't know if you're aware of our routine, but we have a monthly routine with every single operation. We call the CRM process, where we define and we define bands and coverage levels for our critical raw materials, sugar, PET, aluminum, et cetera. And we also look at the coverage from our currency, especially in such a volatile environment. So yes, the question is yes, it will continue. It's part of COF's disciplined approach on the operation management and a way in which the finance function supports our operations. So yes, it will continue. I reiterate that that answer for you.
Luca Sapizia of Goldman Sachs.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for the time and taking my question. And Hector, congratulations and best wishes. Just two follow-ups from my side. One, I think in your introductory remarks, you made some reference on the investments you're making on digital capabilities. And I was hoping maybe you could qualify a little bit better some of this, or a little bit more, rather, some of this initiatives, how relevant are they for your operation, for your partners, and also how are these being, you know, rolled out across markets? Are you starting from Mexico and then, you know, implementing them across the board, or is this, you know, I'm just trying to get a sense of, you know, how relevant or how much of a step change, how much of a incremental benefit that could be from some of this measure that you made reference to. So that's the first question. And then secondly, on the portfolio and on the dairy strategy, also in light of, you know, earlier comments on Panama, do you think the system overall in dairy could benefit from a more organic strategies across a strategy across market, or in other words, do you think that there would be a rationale for a Jugo del Valle type of structure or transaction or addition, given that, you know, the execution and the portfolio itself can appear not entirely consistent across all markets? The dairy presence is stronger in certain markets, weaker in other, and some there isn't any, both your franchises and other franchises. So I don't know if you have any comment on that. I'd be interested in hearing your views. Thank you.
Sure. On the digital front, first thing is what we've done in digital has a lot of components to it, and we have a commercial component, it has a manufacturing distribution component, and it has also an administrative and back office component or staff component. And let me just take you through what I think is probably the most valuable piece, which is the commercial component. There, what we put out is a digital platform that starts with an analytics database. Okay, and let me just use Mexico as an example for the detail. But it goes out there and has, per account, we have about 7,000 pieces of information, and we have all the detail on, you know, 800,000 accounts that we have in Mexico. And through analytics, and we also have elasticities built into that model, as well as purchase structure, consumer purchase structures, it gives us the insight as to how to go out there and manage down to the point of sale, making sure that we have the right pricing structure, the right packaging structure, okay? And now we're also getting into the right demand structure. But all those analytics connect to our marketing department. From the marketing department goes right into the sales department, and we have immediate work orders for each one of our points of sale with independent, or it would be customized promotions for them. And we have this, we have the ability to send out these work orders on a weekly basis. And the feedback that we're getting obviously is weekly, and we understand exactly what we're executing, how we're executing, and what is working for us and not. We have the capability of launching in Mexico 5 million customer initiatives on a monthly basis and getting that information back. And obviously that's a lot of data and a lot of change management. But what has it given us? It's given us first place execution in Mexico, Brazil, and Argentina, okay, and incremental execution right now in Colombia. We've rolled out this platform in our traditional trade throughout all our countries, okay, the marketing platform. The analytics have rolled out in Mexico and Colombia, and they will be rolling out in Brazil this year as well, okay. And we postponed Argentina given the hyperinflationary situation that we've confronted over there. So that's going to be postponed so we get a more stable economic environment. What's it given us besides better execution? It's given us better price realization. We've been able to take pricing above inflation, okay, in these countries. And it's also given us a better return on discounts. And so our ROI, our promotions, have increased in Mexico about by 9 points. And in Colombia by about 5 points. So it's giving us real pricing power, and it's getting to be more effective. Now, the second implication important to all this is that when we have all this information, we're starting to look at it as a forecasting tool, and we've put together an artificial intelligence base so we can go out and predict demand, okay, from all the points of sale going forward. And we're testing this right now in Mexico in one of our warehouses, and we're getting up to 5 points of better accuracy on demand prediction and demand sensing, which will allow us to become a much more efficient supply chain overall. And so all that is done by outlet, by the way. So You know, as we gain more experience, we'll be going through this and opening it up to Mexico in a bigger way and then rolling it out through all the countries. So if you look at the commercial platform, we've rolled it out, you know, in terms of the SAP handheld and marketing analytics piece. I mean, not the marketing analytics piece, but the handheld to all our countries, and the analytics are following this year. Now, the second big bucket that we have that goes along with this is how do we become much more intertwined and end-to-end digitized with our supply chain. So we've implemented what we have in Mexico on a JDA platform, which is a logistics platform, throughout all of our countries already, and it's centralized in Mexico. And that's been providing us with about $25 million worth of savings, okay? We've put also digital we've had all our routes in Mexico are now on, are digitized. We know exactly where they are, how they can deliver. In Brazil, all of our routes in all of our trades are digitized, and we're looking to roll that out into other places as well. I think there's an enormous amount of value that we're creating there, and obviously we'll continue to be leading this forward in terms of the Coca-Cola system. The other question you had was on the portfolio strategy on milk or dairy.
Yeah.
And if there's other acquisitions, potential acquisitions out there that could make sense, yes, we take a look at it, okay? And depending on the values, you know, that we think we can create for our shareholders, we go out there and pursue it. I think there are a lot of synergies to be had with those categories, but there are also significant differences that you have to understand, which we're understanding in Panama, which is cold, and also the short shelf life products that are a totally different business than what we have in Coca-Cola. But they are something that we'd be looking at continuously.
Excellent. Thank you very much for the answer, for the details. Very interesting. Just on the dairy, the angle of my question was also, you know, across the categories, you know, typically you have brands or products that work across geography. Dairy is a little bit of an exception where every country has got its own in a sense. So is that something that you see should change, could change, or does it make sense to do it that way?
No, I don't think it makes a lot of sense to go out there and try to leverage dairy from one country to another unless it's UHT. Okay. Milk is a very regional business. And so I don't think necessarily we have a large strategy going forward on that end. I do think we have brands like Abbas that goes out there and plays in that space. But on the seed base, that is expandable, and which we are expanding, okay? But dairy is more of a local business with local credentials.
And our final question for today will come from Alvaro Garcia of BTG.
Hi. Thanks for the call. Most of my questions have been answered. Maybe you could provide a roadmap. So on the capital allocation front, when we think of the $700 million you received from the Philippines, perhaps you could provide a roadmap, sort of including that Yankee bond up in February next year, of how much debt you expect to pay down over the next 12 to 18 months. Thank you.
Yes, hi, this is Constantino. Basically, we've analyzed the proceeds of that transaction that we did in the Philippines, and very straightforward, our intent is to use the cash that we received to pay our debt, continue a deleveraging path, and most importantly, I think that in February of next year, 2020, we have a Yankee bond that is due, and we'll be using the proceeds of that transaction to continue lowering our net debt ratio, which is quite healthy right now, 1.6. So that gives us a very flexible profile on the balance sheet going forward. So the answer is yes, we'll use the proceeds to continue deleveraging and pay our debt.
Apart from that, is it fair to assume that this year maybe we'll see a couple hundred million dollars in some pay down of debt to sort of get to that $700 million, or is that Yankee bond really the only thing you have on your target?
Yeah.
this sector, we already used part of the proceeds to repay some of the bilateral loans that we have that were related to the Uruguay and Guatemala acquisition. So that's basically, with that, the $200 million plus, it was concerning this $240 that we have on February 2020. That will basically cover the $700 million. And as John and Constantino were explaining in the board of directors that we have yesterday, this decision was that to hold to these $500 million and wait, given the good coupon that we have on that Yankee versus the possibility of investing those resources on a secure manner, the negative carry is basically zero. And the decision was to keep this $500 million in cash, given the volatility that we're seeing in the markets, and just wait for 2020 and use that as a repayment. Okay.
Perfect. That's very, very clear. And all the best, Hector. All the best going forward.
Thank you.
I hope you guys treat me as well as you treat Hector.
And that does conclude the question and answer session. I'll turn the conference back over to our presenters for any additional or closing comments.
Thank you all for being here today, and I'd just like to take the opportunity again to thank Hector for such a remarkable career and being such a great collaborator, friend, and leader of the Coca-Cola FEMSA, and not only the Coca-Cola FEMSA company, but also Coca-Cola Company, and also just a great friend. And I trust him and Maria Fernanda are going to have a lot of good times going forward, but we'll always be counting on his advice and closeness as we go forward. And to you all on the line, thank you for your confidence and interest in Coca-Cola FEMSA. They are interesting times, but I'm sure that we'll be coming out very positively during this very challenging 2019. And our team is always available to answer questions through Maria Diela and her team, and hope to talk to you very soon. Thank you very much for being with us today.
That does conclude today's conference. Thank you all for your participation. You may now disconnect.